You're listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network.
You're listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily, the most listened to daily Miami Dolphins podcast on the internet. Come on, Dolphins fans. Time to fins up. Good morning, Miami Dolphins fans. How are you today? And thank you for listening to DolphinsTalk.com Daily on this Friday, October the 22nd. This show is brought to you by BetUS. I am your host, Mike, joined by Carter Melrose from the Two Amigos podcast, which can be heard here on the DolphinsTalk.com website and the DolphinsTalk.com podcast network. Carter, how are you doing today?
As good as I can. I mean, the one thing I have to say, and we're not even going to touch on the Watson stuff because we've done that a bunch, but we might be on the edge of losing our name for our podcast.
That might be a fallout. That's true. If he is moved, you're going to have to come up with a new and creative name for the podcast. Well, because I know Two Amigos ain't going to fly.
It can't fly.
Now for a podcast about the Miami Dolphins, I didn't even think about that.
About that fallout, Mike. That's the biggest fallout.
It didn't come across my plate until now. So we'll have to get on that if something were to happen.
Right.
First off, before we start, as always, big shout out to everyone at finheaven.com. Everyone go to finheaven.com, the largest Miami Dolphins message board on the internet. Also a big shout out to everyone listening on the I Am a Miami Dolphins Fan Facebook group run by the great Carlos Hernandez. Big shout out to them as well. And later on in this podcast, I have a one-on-one interview with Will McFadden, who is a reporter who covers the Atlanta Falcons. So I will talk with him for about 20 minutes or so as we preview this game and talk about all things Atlanta Falcons as they enter this season in this week, 2-3 facing the Dolphins. They're not having a great season either, but let's talk about this game from a Dolphins perspective. Miami's 1-5, lost 5 in a row. It can't get any worse. Just lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who lost 20 in a row. And Miami is heading home, where they've played 2 home games this year. Hasn't looked good in either home game against the Bills or the Colts. So I guess, Carter, what do you expect to see from Miami this game? And let me phrase it this way. I think this week we're going to see. There's been a lot of chatter. You know, when teams lose, go on losing streaks, so always a lot of talk, a lot of chatter about the locker room. Is the locker room split? Is the locker room divided? Has the head coach lost the locker room? We're going to see this week by the performance they put on the field after losing 5 in a row, if this team is playing hard for its head coach or if they have sort of waved the white flag. What do you think?
I don't know. I feel as if the 10-6 season last season is so disconnected from our team today that it's really hard to know if that respect is still there. And is that like, oh, well, you could say, well, the start of last season, you went 1-4 and then you rattled off 10 straight. But the turning point was that Jaguars game. The big turning point was the Jaguars game last season. And this season, it was just one of those games that actually just made you absolutely depressed. And made you felt like there's nothing good about the season that can be scraped. I would say it all depends on how you respond to one of the most embarrassing losses that I have ever been a part of. So I don't know how to respond, honestly. I'm going to let you kind of – I would love to hear what you think on that.
I think because this team is filled with so many young players, guys first year in the league, second year in the league, they're going to play hard. Those guys will at least, because I think, you know, they're so new. They're still so new to the NFL, and those guys are just trying to make a name for themselves. So I think because we have so many young guys on this team, they're actually going to play hard. I think – from the injury report, let me call up the injury report. A lot of guys seem like they're going to be back this week. I'll see if I can find it real quick. I should have been more prepared. That's a poor job by me. But I think it sounds like most of the guys were back in practice this week. or on Thursday. Let's see. This is not a very good podcast. So I don't have the report in front of me. Here it is right here. Latest. So, well, they pretty much listed everyone as limited. Okay, so from the sounds of it, it sounds like Parker, Preston Williams, Howard, and Jones should be back. So I think that's going to help. Even if they're not all back, I think most will be back. That's going to help. But I do think because there's so many young players on the team, they're going to play hard. I also think in the NFL, even the teams that are bad, and I would say right now they're a bad team, the Dolphins, unfortunately, they're going to have a week where they just take it out on somebody. Now, it's not going to be against the Bills, and it probably won't be against the Ravens. So that leaves in the next month either this game against Atlanta or the game against Houston. One of these games, they're going to have a game where they look like the team we all thought they were and the team that we all, you know, expected them to be this year. I think it might be this week because I think Atlanta on offense are very talented with Ridley, Russell Gage, Matt Ryan, Pitts, even their running back Mike Davis is a solid player. I mean, he's not great, but he's very good. I think they're going to put up some points, but I think Miami can take advantage of Atlanta's weak defense. Now, we all thought the same last week. They only scored 20 points. But I do think being at home, just one of these weeks, there's going to be an explosion, and there's going to be a game where it's like, that's the team we thought they were. I think it might be this week. But I will say, if they come out and lay another egg at home and look really bad and lose at home to Atlanta, who's not a good team, okay, Atlanta's only won two games this year, and they're against the Jets and the Giants, who are two awful teams. So they're not any good. If they lose at home to Atlanta, then it's safe to say the head coach has lost his locker room.
Yeah, and also – I've done a little. I think we started the show a little, you know, pessimistic and all. So I wanted to. I wanted to say this. I've done a little bit of math within the schedule here, and I want to see if there was any wiggle room for optimism. If we hit this out of the park, right, and we know that Brian Flores teams, when they get, when they start winning in bunches. We saw that at the end of the first season for him, and we saw that also in the second season for him. So maybe this could be that big catalyst game like you were talking about, okay? And let's say we somehow, I don't think it's possible, we beat the Bills or the Ravens. We're not going to. But if we do, okay, that's possible. The stretch of four games after that of the Giants, the Panthers, the Jets twice, you could sweep that whole part of the schedule and be over 500 again. I don't think it's possible, but that's just one thing I wanted to say is that if it's a Brian Flores team, just like we hope he's been, this could be that huge catalyst towards this big winning streak. It could be possible. That's my optimistic take.
Yeah, anything's possible. And some of those teams that they do have under schedule, starting with this week, I mean, it really started last week, but okay, they lost. Moving on, are also really bad. And if the Dolphins offense, you know, picks it up a little, that's it really comes down to the offense, because when they're healthy on the other side of the ball with Howard and Jones, it's not going to be the same unit that it was last year, clearly, but it's also not awful. I mean, let's think about this for just 1 second. Last week they had no Xavier Howard and no Jones at cornerback, right, the two highest paid guys on the team. They still only gave up 23 points. So it's like, so that works each way. It's like, wow, the guys we have behind them actually played well. They didn't give up a ton of points. And then you also look at the flip side. Why are we paying these guys so much? Maybe we don't need to pay them both. We can live with just one of them, not both, which is a whole different conversation for a whole different day. Mm-hmm. But I think that side of the ball is going to be okay. We've seen Phillips improve week after week. He's looked good. Raekwon Davis is back. He's looked good all year when he's played, obviously. Andrew Van Ginkle's been really quiet this year, really, really quiet. He was a guy I think a lot of fans thought would have a breakout year. It just hasn't happened yet, but still kind of early, I guess. So I think that side of the ball is okay. It really comes down to, can the Dolphins do anything on offense? And I know it's all bad. Offensive line's bad, running backs are bad, play calling's bad, and the quarterback's injured more times than he's healthy. I get it. And all the wide receivers are hurt. So I get it. It's not a perfect situation. But the most optimistic thing is you think some of these young offensive linemen, you know, I think outside of Austin Jackson, who I've lost all faith in, can get a little bit better as the season goes on. I think Tua is obviously an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett. He's got to hope he stays healthy. I think some of these wide receivers will start to get healthy in return. I mean, how long will they stay healthy? Who knows? But if they're on the field playing, it's more. I'd rather see Parker and Preston Williams and maybe eventually Will Fuller on the field than Matt Collins. Not a knock on Matt Collins, but at wide receiver, I'd rather have those guys than Matt Collins. It's just a fact. Running backs, it is what it is. They're just bad at running back. I mean, I know fans get upset. They love. I know a lot of fans love Myles Gaskin. And I liked him last year for the role he was in. I don't see it. I mean, he's just a guy. So if they get healthy, offensive line gets a little bit better, quarterback situation is more stable, yeah, they're going to win a few games. I mean, are they going to make a run of some sort? Like, I think last year they won, like, what, 6-7 in a row, 8 in a row at one point until they lost to the Broncos. I don't see that happening just because of the schedule is all sort of laid out. But, yeah, I mean, if they beat Atlanta, lose to the Bills, beat Houston, going into that Thursday night game where you're at home on a short weekend to the Ravens. Ravens are good, very
good.
They
own us.
But, yeah, true, they own us. But if you're ever going to beat them, it's going to be on a short week where they're on the road.
Right.
So, yeah, look, they're not going to make the playoffs this year. But could they turn a season around, at least be respectable? Yeah, that's absolutely possible. It's going to take a lot, though, especially on the offensive side of the ball. It's going to have to be a lot of changes. And it's going to have, and a lot of these guys are just going to have to stay healthy, too.
Oh, here's my question for you, Mike, though. Is this not a better team than last year on paper? Isn't it? Am I crazy?
I say no. But okay. Here's why. I mean, it's not the same team, but it's on paper. It's a wide receiver on paper is much better.
Right.
Outside of that, I don't think it's much better anywhere else. I think, and I know the guys they ran off were not superstars. I know Eric Flowers, people say Eric Flowers. But Eric Flowers, it worked last year on the offensive line. No, it wasn't the best offensive line in the league. But putting him next to Austin Jackson and putting him next to Ted Karras at center, it kept the offensive line at least somewhat respectable. Right now, the offensive line is not even respectable. So when you run off Ted Karras and you run off Eric Flowers and you literally replace them with Liam Eichenberg's a nice player, and I kind of like him. I think he's going to have a bright future, so I'm not even going to knock him. But Michael Dieter, who's now hurt, you know, he did nothing here for 2 years. And how they could sort of pencil him in at center and thinking he's going to hold down the spot makes no sense. Then they sign Matt Skira, and they run him off in training camp. It's like, I don't know. And then on the other side of the ball, I know I say this on every podcast, but Shaq Lawson, Kyle Vannoy, Bobby McCain, did you have to run them all off? Like every veteran? All of them? Could you maybe have kept one or two? You had to run them all off. It's like,
it was a little cocky, honestly.
It's like, I say this, and it's not a joke. People think I'm joking. Every year we are a glorified expansion team because we have so much youth. And that's, I think, the big picture issue is you got to have some veterans. And I know we got like Howard and Jones, but cornerback's a little tricky because they're on an island by themselves, especially in our scheme. They're on islands by themselves, to which they will do their job. So it's tough for those guys to kind of like rally the troops and line up other players on that side of the ball because they're just on an island. So I get it. We have some veterans, but we don't have like not even nearly enough veterans. And we run off. So it's a very young team, and we're asking guys in years one and two, for the most part. I mean, yes, you have guys like Agba, but that's more the exception than the norm. We have so many younger guys in their first rookie deals in big spots. We're asking them to do important roles and be like cornerstones of a team. You look at Tampa Bay, it's all veteran. You look at the Bills, they got a lot of veterans. You look at a team like the Chiefs, a lot of veterans. Yeah, those teams also have superstar quarterbacks. I get it. But they also don't put like rookies in huge roles where they expect him to do a lot. Andrew Van Ginkle, why he was great last year, because he was coming off the bench and they gave him one job. You rush the quarterback when you're on the field. Don't worry about nothing else. Now he's not in that role. He's got to do more. He's in coverage. He's doing this. He's got to do it. You're not getting the same results because he's not ready for the role he's in now yet. He might be in a year or so, but he's not ready now. You needed to sort of bring him along slowly, keep him in the one role where he excelled, and just leave him there. And I think that's where you need veterans. And I know we have a ton of salary cap space heading into next year. So next year, I expect this to go the knee-jerk overreaction the opposite way, where we go spend $1 zillion on a bunch of old guys who are past their prime, because that's usually how we do it. We go to one extreme to the other. There's never a happy medium. Because I'm not even saying they need a bunch of veterans. Just give me like three or four. That's all I'm asking for. Because I think Austin Jackson last year, one of the reasons he was okay because he had veterans next to him. Now, you know, he's got another rookie. I mean, he's just – it's all rookies, and it's all youth. And that's – you're not going to win in this league with just first- and second-year guys in primary spots, as many of them as we have.
That's fair. That's fair. I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I'll concede that point.
Yeah, and I mean – it's going to be interesting to see how the year plays. Obviously, everyone is thinking Flores, Greer, are they in trouble? It depends on how many games they win, honestly. I've said for weeks now, after the season kind of went south here real quick, this is a 3-6 win team. They're going to win somewhere between 3 and 6. 3 might be a little too low, but they ain't going to win more than 6. And 1's already in the bank, so they ain't winning more than 6. So it's somewhere in that range, I think. You got the trade deadline November 2nd. I don't know. That's gonna. I mean, Watson. That's like an ownership call. So I'm not even gonna put that on their plate. That's something that's gonna come down from Ross if he wants to even go through this or not. But any other smaller trades, like they got guys they could trade and get something from. See, because if you're Chris Greer, you have to prepare for the future. Like you will be here because you can't be like I'm probably getting fired, so I'm not gonna do nothing. Screw that. You can't. You might be here, so you want to set yourself up to have success next year. So like you have Howard and Jones. Howard, he might be gone after this year, clearly, because they had to beg him to come back this year and they'd give him a little bit of a raise and all that good stuff. So if you think, and they did promise him in the offseason, they would either rework his deal and pay him more or just rip up the deal and give him a whole new deal. If they don't want to do that, well, now's the time to move him and get something for him. Why let him walk in the offseason when you get nothing where he's just going to be cut? That makes no sense. You might as well trade him now to a team that, and there's teams like the Chiefs, the Titans, Tampa Bay, who needs help in their secondary that might win a Super Bowl, who would probably part with a pretty penny to get him. Jones, if a team doesn't want to go through the Howard drama of the contract, Jones already has a contract, might be a little bit less drama. You might get a little bit less than you would for Howard, but okay, you can move him. If there's a team that needs a wide receiver, Will Fuller, he can be back soon. He's on a one-year deal. Team could take him as a rental. Probably get like a pick around 5 or 6 for him, but okay, whatever. I'll take anything I can get because he ain't going to help us any. Because he hasn't yet. Or Parker, you know, the guy's always hurt. He's been here for 6 years now. It might be time just after this year to move on. I know he's got a team-friendly deal, but at some point you just have to move on. It's just not working. It's like a relationship. It's not working anymore. And those are guys you could trade now to teams who are in a race and get something to help next offseason because I know we've missed on a ton of picks. What are you going to do? Quit? You can't quit. You got to keep trying. You know what I mean? Like, that's what you do.
I understand that. I do not love the selling the boat thing. I don't know why.
Not all. You know what I mean? These guys, yeah. I'm not saying trade them all, but just like a couple, you could.
Sure. I'm okay with DeFonte Parker going. That dude has. We're always talking about this guy's potential, but he catches about 50% of his jump balls, and he's injured most of the time. So I don't care about that type of thing. And obviously Preston Williams or Mac Hollins could probably do what DeVante Parker does well enough. But the thing I will say though is, and I was kind of saying this on my own show, without X, what is this defense? You know, what is this defense? I don't think we even have very like more than two good players on this team, right? We don't have any great defenders after X is gone. What is it? We have nothing left. We are a barren rebuild ship at that point almost.
With him, though, you're going to have to pay him. And he ain't – look, he told you last year, I want to be traded and I'm pissed off. So and he gave all the reasons. He ain't going to give you no hometown discount. He wants to be paid like the number one cornerback in the league, which is like paying him like a quarterback. And do they want to do that? I don't know. If they plan on holding on to Jones, you can make a case, you know what, X, you wanted to be traded. We gave you a little bit of a raise, but we're going to go and hold it. I mean, I think between X and Jones, you could trade one and be okay. I don't even care which one they trade. You can trade one because to me, Jones is very good as well. He gets a bad rap, but I think Jones is very good. Jones, any type of bad rap he gets is because teams pick on Howard, so Jones sees more work. If Jones is on the field with no Howard, teams are going to avoid Jones. They're going to throw to Nick Needham or Igbenogany, God forbid. It ain't going to be. So Jones gets more work because he's on the field with X. Jones is a capable number one cornerback. One of those guys, if they're gone, would not bother me in the least because I think we have too much of our assets allocated in one position, which is probably needs to be fixed. Probably need a correction on that moving forward. Mm-hmm. But I think between now and November 2nd, it will be interesting to see with a trade deadline if they do anything outside of Watson, of course. If they do anything smaller trades like with Grant. Once again, most of these guys, outside of Howard probably, or Jonesy, aren't going to give you a big return. Like if you trade Will Fuller's on a one-year deal, you know, you're going to get like a fifth or sixth round pick for him. You ain't get nothing more. Parker, at most a fourth, probably a fifth with him. Jones and Howard's where you get into like real compensation, like rounds one and two we're talking there.
You know, though, if we trade X or Byron, Flo's just going to demand another corner in the draft.
Oh, he just likes
corners. You know what I mean?
And that's part of the problem. I've said for weeks, he is Adam Gase, just the opposite. Adam Gase only cared about the offense, ignore the defense. Brian Flores only cares about the defense and puts literally no time into the offense. He's Adam Gase, just the opposite, which...
Fair, honestly.
That's an issue. That's an issue for a head coach. We thought he was going in the right direction, but clearly he cannot find an offensive system or staff that works. And that's a lot of the issues. I know the offense isn't great talent-wise, but man, some of the play calling's been just questionable and brutal. It's very bland. It's very vanilla. And again, I don't know how they went an entire offseason, free agency and the draft, thinking that this running back room was good enough and the offensive line was good enough. That just...
It's the cockiness thing again, I think.
It is.
It's
that we draft these guys, they're going to be fine. We know what we're doing. You shut up. That's what it is.
Yeah, you were talking about the vets thing where they're like, we don't need vets. We're like, we're really, really good coaching staff. We just, you know, it's just a plug and play with all these players. And obviously, it's not true. And obviously, they can't make it without an established running back. And all these things that they think they're too good for has really come back to bite them, you know?
Yeah, it's true. And I think with the vets as well, I know it drives me nuts when I hear and read this. You know, people give them credit for sort of moving on from guys and not eating a lot of money on the cap. Like they structured a deal with Kyle Vannoy where after 1 year, if they cut him, they're only eating so much money on the cap. Well, the goal when you sign a guy is not just him for a year. Let's not give him credit for screwing up. You know what I mean? You're giving him credit mm-hmm. for screwing up. If the guy's not that good, why'd you give him the contract to begin with? It's like walking to the altar and like as you're walking down, I got a prenup, guys. Don't worry. I got a prenup. It ain't going to be bad. We're going to be okay. I mean, that's essentially what, you know, some fans.
That's fair.
That's what they say about this. Like, we're going to get out of this. It's not going to be anything bad on me. It's like walking up saying, I got a prenup. We're okay, guys. I'm not losing the house.
Don't worry. I'll break up with her, but it's not a big deal.
So that's, and that's where, and I know we're totally off the Atlanta game. That's where.
No. I was going to say, we went on a rant, which is actually, I think it was good. It was the good therapy for Dolphins fans.
Yeah. I think fans need their eyes open to some of this stuff because I know a lot of fans on Dolphins, and I always say, you know, not all the fans who listen to this podcast are on social media. You know, most are and some are, but not all fans are like on Twitter and stuff. So a lot of fans who are on social media, I see, just make excuses that I always say this: some fans at Dolphins, not all, some would rather climb a tree and tell themselves a lie than just stand on the ground and admit the truth. They'd rather put in work to lie than just stand on the ground and just admit the truth, which I never understand. So I think sometimes fans just really, you know, it's okay to be critical of your team. You can still be a fan of your team, even though you're critical of them. It's not against the rules. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Let me jump in on that point, honestly, because there's this narrative going around that if we went 0-17 for the next six seasons, everyone's like, I'm a Miami Dolphin fan till I die. Okay. And I'm not going to say a bad word about this team. And if you do, it's because you are a bad fan and you were never a fan. And
you're negative. You're a hater.
And the thing I'll tell you is this goes for relationships. This goes for worldwide. Okay. Loyalty. When someone doesn't deserve it or a team doesn't deserve it, that isn't beautiful. That's weakness. And that's, you know, that's something everyone needs to realize. If like you're in a really bad abusive relationship and you're loyal to that person, that's weakness. That's not strength. And that's something we have to realize is that this is a toxic relationship with the Dolphins, and we can't just sit there and go, you know what? They're rebuilding. It's fine. We can just keep rebuilding. That isn't loyalty. That's not loyalty.
Yeah, I mean, they always say if you want change, you got to stand up, get off your butt, and make it happen. And I think as fans, the only thing you really can do is not really stand up and make it happen because there's no way to do that in professional sports. But you can voice your displeasure. And that's one way to do it. And, you know, once again, it's not all. I do think there's some young talent here that's going to be really good. I think Javon Holland's going to be really good. Waddle's going to be really good. I think Liam Eichenberg and Time's going to be good. I mean, they moved this kid around at so many positions. I think just putting him at one position now, I think we'll see over the course of the rest of the season, he's going to just find a home and be fine. I think Liam Eichenberg is going to be good. I think Raekwon is going to be really good on that line for years to come. Christian Wilkins looks like he's taking a big step this year. They got pieces. What they don't have is, and I know fans get mad, but it's true, stability of quarterback, which they bring on themselves. They could have it, but they don't because they bring it on themselves. And they also don't have an offensive philosophy. This offense in this league in general, in the NFL, it's a passing league. It is. The days of 3 yards in a cloud of dust are long over. Since the 1980s with, like, the Giants and, like, you know, the Redskins. Well, I can't say the Redskins anymore. The Washington football team.
Thank you.
Yeah, exactly. I know. Really. Old. I don't want to offend anybody and, like, start losing sponsors. Like, those days are over. So it really does come down to you need to be able to throw the ball. And to throw the ball, you need a philosophy. You need that mindset. Yes, you have to run the ball. Don't get me wrong. But you need that mindset and you need the talent. You need an offensive line who can keep your quarterback's pocket clean, and you need weapons down the field. Now, we got a couple weapons when they're healthy. I mean, we have weapons, but we also just need that offensive line to sort of complement the quarterback, and we need a quarterback to be consistently on the field and consistently good. Look, everyone's going to have a bad game. Everyone's going to throw a bad pass. Nobody's saying he's got to be perfect. And it's not even about Tua. This is just in general, big picture approach for any team. You just need a quarterback to be consistently good and not lose you games. And we could have that. We just don't know. And I think once, whether it's Flores next year or it's somebody else, they need a strong-minded offensive coordinator and someone who's going to say, this is what we do. This is our bread and butter. And, you know, saying we have an RPO system, that's not a philosophy. That's just saying we run RPO plays when we have no run in the RPO, so it doesn't even make a difference. We need an offensive, like, you know, the Chiefs, yes, they have Pat Mahomes, so it's a little different. This is our offense. We're going to spread you out. We're going to throw it down, and we're going to attack the field. You know, the Ravens are going to line up, and they're going to run smash mouth, and Lamar Jackson is going to make plays with his legs, and we're going to run it down your throat time after time. You know, the Browns, we have Chubb and Hunt. They're going to run it, and then we're going to bleed, and then we're going to throw play action with Mayfield. Those teams have a philosophy. They have a mindset. This is what we do, and we're going to get the talent to fit that. Miami's all over the freaking place.
I thought it was an RPO for a little bit, wasn't it?
Yeah, but
found out it was dumb.
Yeah, it is the RPO, but it takes RPO. Yes, it is that, but we don't have the talent to make it work. We sort of hired off like offensive coordinators who weren't like masters of the RPO. You know what I mean? It's like, we're going to run an RPO. It's like me coming down to the kitchen and being like, I'm going to cook Mexican tonight. I don't know how to cook Mexican. I'm just going to do it. It's like, no, it don't work that way. You need guys who knows the RPO, like the back of their hand, guys who've run the RPO system, whether, you know, in a major college or for another NFL team. We need, or if it's not RPO, say it's smash mouth play action like the Browns, or say it's whatever. You need that mindset. This is what we are. This is what we do. And we're going to bring in the talent to fit that. It's like the Ravens. When they took J.K. Dobbins in round 2 last year, do they need another running back? No. But they know who they are. And they know we are a run first, run heavy team. And we're going to get this guy because he fits our system. And we're going to go through running back. We might need a couple because we run more than the average team. So we're going to bring – you know who you are, and you add to it. We need that mindset. We need that philosophy.
Yeah, and the run portion of the RPO, you just don't respect that with Myles Gaskin out there. You just don't. It's like
or Malcolm Brown or Salvin Ahmed. None of them.
Right, you're just like you need that to be like an equal threat. Like that's the whole idea, is that if you hand off the ball, that's kind of scary if we're not ready, and if you pass the ball, it's kind of scary if we're not ready, and obviously, we just don't have a back that can pick up 5-6 yards a carry to make you respect the other thing. So it was just born to be terrible this year, honestly.
Yeah, and it's not working, but we got Atlanta this week. And I think with Atlanta,
there we go. There's the segue
to Atlanta. As we we'll do a few minutes here before we get to Will McFadden, the Atlanta Falcons reporter. I'll say this with the Atlanta game. Atlanta is terrible on defense. If you think Miami has been bad on defense this year, Atlanta's really bad.
They're bad.
So if there's ever a week where Miami can get healthy on offense and have a week where it's like, this was a team we thought we'd see all year from an offensive perspective, I do think this is the week where that will happen. On the other side of the ball, Atlanta's going to challenge you. Matt Ryan's as consistent as they come. I mean, you know what you get from him week after week, year after year. He's always the same guy, which is very, very good. He might not be, you know, in the Rodgers, you know, Tom Brady discussion, but he's like the next level down, which is very good. And I'd sign up for that tomorrow, honestly. Ridley's a stud wide receiver. Pitts looks like, I mean, I know he's a rookie. His last game against the Jets, he had a breakout game, and he looks like he's the real deal. They have a solid running game. Not great, but it's good. So they're going to present some challenges to this Miami Dolphins defense. It looks like Howard and Jones will play. That's a plus. So I think we're going to see a lot of points in this game. And like I said, I think one of these games, it's either this one or Houston, I don't know, Miami's going to just have a breakout game. And I think it might be this week.
I think it is too.
Yeah, so I got Miami winning 31-24. I think this is going to be a week where they just they get a win and the pressure for a week just goes away, for a week at least, and they can move on to the Bills where it's not going to be pretty next week. But they can just have a week where they get a win and they stop the bleeding, stop the losing streak, and, you know, get as close to back on course as one can get when you're 1-5.
Yeah, and this defense is just our defense. If we're full power here going into this game against the Birds, I think we are built to stop the Falcons. I think we're completely built to stop the Falcons because they have just really just one wide receiver you are a little bit afraid of, honestly. Yeah. They got one guy, and if X is – and then you're supposed to be able to guard tight ends pretty well, and so that's the other weapon you worry about is Kyle Pitts. And then – you know, we also allow 150 rushing yards to every running back in the NFL. But you don't really worry about, I think it's Cordell Patterson this week. You shouldn't have to worry about the guy.
It's him and Mike Davis. They split.
Is it Mike Davis and
Cordell? Well, they split, yeah. Took a 1-1-8.
I'm not worried about either of them, but obviously they're still going to run for a $150. It doesn't matter. So theoretically, how this defense is built, we should clamp. This should be a big game. And then offensively, like you said, the Falcons, they're trash. So God hope that this is the week you're talking about where we have a big week in this, you know, we can settle down, calm down a little bit week. And I think it probably will be 28-7, something like that. Something like a really good
one-sided win. Yeah.
Yeah. One-sided win where you're not afraid the entire time or like behind. So
yeah, that would be nice. And that is what's needed right now in Miami for everyone involved, because if they lose a third game in a row at home, go 0-3 at home on the year, then they have to travel to Buffalo. Good God. I mean, if you thought that it was not fun up until now, if you think that's a hard time, I'll show you a hard time. That's going to pale in comparison to what a hard time really is. It's going 1-6, 5 in a row, traveling to Buffalo where you just never win. And they relish beat crap out of Miami. They
enjoy it. We're on the road against Buffalo. I forgot. Yeah. Ugh.
Halloween day, I think it is. They relish beating Miami. That's going to be – so this game really is a big one for Miami. Just to stop the bleeding, stop the pain right now. And with the Watson stuff, look, and we've all spoken about it ad nauseum at this point, and who knows what's going to happen. I'll say this. Nothing surprises me. I don't know if it's going to happen this week, which right now it's Friday. At the time we are recording, it hasn't happened yet, but maybe by the time you're listening, it has. I don't know if it's going to happen next week up until November 2nd or if it's going to happen in the offseason. But the story is not going to go away because until he's either in prison or in a uniform of a team, Miami will be linked to him as possible trade partner. So if you think we're at November 3rd, can't trade for him. Nope. It's still going to be talked about. Like, well, in the offseason, is Miami going to trade for him? What's going on with Tua? A bad day. That's why they're going to trade for Watson in the offseason. It's never going to go away. But if I had to bet a dollar.
Okay, let's bet a dollar.
Let's bet a well, I don't want to really bet a dollar.
Like okay.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. If we had to bet a dollar, let's say, would you bet Watson is traded, whether to Miami or someone else, by November 2nd or not?
I don't. I personally say no, and I think you said yes, right?
No, well, I think he's going to end up in Miami eventually. I don't know if it's going to be in the next week or two. That's where it gets tricky. I think there's clearly smoke here, so they're going to make a move for him eventually. Right. I just don't know if it's going to be by November 2nd, which is not that far away, or if they wait to the offseason and see how some of the off-the-field stuff plays out a little more. Now here's where all teams have to weigh this. If you do it now, you're going to get them on a bargain because Houston probably wants to move him bad. They'll probably take a little bit less.
You don't think later he goes into this, like, no, not playing at all thing?
Because at a certain point, you're going to know in that if stuff gets cleared up and he's free, Houston's going to be like three first, three second, a third, and a player. But because at a certain point, teams are going to stop being interested if he's like, has to be like in court every day at 9 a.m. So that, you know, that really kills the trade for any team. But even if there's a settlement of some sort and it just all goes away, then the trade value goes back up because now as a team, you know, okay, maybe he gets like a 6-game suspension or something, but I know I'm going to have him like week 7 next year. And then Houston can be like, okay, he's pretty much, I mean, not clear. Look, it's not a moral judgment here. Talking about just black and white on the field or not. You sort of know when you'll have him, if you can have him. And that's when the price goes up. Right now, since there's uncertainty, the price is low. Once the uncertainty goes away, either there's no deal or it goes through the roof again, like you would for trading for a 26-year-old franchise quarterback.
Yeah, and I think this is my humble opinion on it is that this season might just be over either way.
It is. It has nothing to do with this season. He'll never take a snap this year for the Dolphins. It has nothing to do with this season. It's about the next 5 seasons.
Right. That's what I'm saying. So if the season is over and we can agree on that and that there's basically we're watching 11 games and you got to enjoy these 11 games, I think you just say, okay, well, if we trade Tua away, we're going to have to watch Jacoby Brissett for the next 11 games because Watson won't play the season probably. And so I think what they'll do, and I think that's the probably, I don't think it'll be cleared up by the offseason. So what I think you do is you just watch Tua for the next 11 games. You just watch him and see how he plays because there's nothing to play for. There's nothing to play for. So it's not like even if we somehow, with a Watson trade, he plays this year somehow. That would not happen. And you win 11 straight. You get to the playoffs. This team's not a playoff team. So it doesn't matter. Nothing matters. Just watch Tua for the next 11 games. That's what I want.
Yeah, and hopefully these games are more watchable than they have been.
Yeah.
And more exciting to be watching. But so what we're going to do right now is take a quick break. And after the break, I'll be joined by Will McFadden, reporter for the Atlanta Falcons, for the Falcoholic, and also a podcast host at the Believe Podcast Network who covers the Falcons. So everyone sit tight, and we'll be back after this.
DolphinsTalk.com is your one stop for all things Miami Dolphins. With news, commentary, video, interviews, and the Webby Award-winning DolphinsTalk.com daily podcast, DolphinsTalk.com has you covered on all of the latest happenings surrounding the Miami Dolphins. Whether it's training camp, the draft, free agency, or the current Miami Dolphins season, DolphinsTalk.com has it covered. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at DolphinsTalk and to visit the website, DolphinsTalk.com, each and every day. That's DolphinsTalk.com.
Joining me on the DolphinsTalk.com podcast is Will McFadden, a reporter for the Atlanta Falcons, also co-host of the Believe in Falcons podcast on the Believe Podcast Network. Will, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, Mike. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited to talk about a game that probably not too many people are actually excited about.
I know. Heading into the season, I think a lot of people thought this might be a game that might have a lot of meaning or something behind it, and now we sit both teams with a losing record, so I'm not so sure how interesting it is to fans outside of each team respectively. But let's start with this. The Falcons are 2-3 on the year. They got wins over the Jets and Giants, and they have lost to Washington, Tampa Bay, Philadelphia. Just what are your overall thoughts on the Falcons at this point in the season?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question, and you prompted it kind of talking about before the season that this might have been a kind of a fun game, a bit of a cool early season challenge, because I think that at least some of the people that I've talked to, like the Falcons, people around the league really look at the Dolphins as kind of a model franchise for maybe how you kind of rebuild fairly quickly, a little bit of ahead of schedule, and kind of turn things around in the modern NFL. And for some reason, like that has not been the case for the Dolphins this year. But I think that that's kind of what a lot of people hoped for here in Atlanta is, okay, are we really looking at it like a full teardown? Is this really a 3-4-5 year like long play? Or is there a way that you can kind of do this on the fly a little bit, interchange some pieces here and there when you need to, but find a way to kind of get back into relevance sooner rather than later? And so it stinks that we are sitting here with the Dolphins at 1-5, the Falcons at 2-3, because it's clearly not that. Having said that, though, the Falcons do seem like they feel more like a 3-2 team. And you look at that Washington game in week 4 that Atlanta really was kind of controlling throughout and then just let it slip away late. But then they bounced back nicely on the road, obviously, early kickoff in London, which you guys are just coming off your own London trip. But everything so far that Arthur Smith has been talking about with this team is incremental improvement. They just want to try to get better each week, be playing their best football with each consecutive week, and really kind of instill an identity into this team. And I do think that they are having success doing that. Now, obviously, the level of competition has not been super high so far to start the season for Atlanta. So that could really be coloring all of this. Yeah, you beat the Jets, you beat the Giants, but like they're the Jets and the Giants, and you didn't really win by all that great of a margin. They could face a good team and just get steamrolled. But at least so far right now, it seems like the Falcons are heading in the right direction, even if it's only incrementally.
Yeah, and when you talk about a rebuild, I guess this sort of leads to my next question, in that Matt Ryan is still a very good player. He's still playing at a pretty high level.
Yeah.
But if they're going to rebuild this, what's his long-term future in Atlanta past this year? Is this because there has to come a point where you sort of move on from him, or you get someone in place ready to take over? Mm-hmm. I guess what, because they were just had the number 4 pick in the draft. There were a few quarterbacks on the board. They obviously went with Pitts in a whole different way, right, which makes me think they were trying to win this year, because that's a win now move, I think. Well, you know, to not go quarterback there with so many of them on the board, maybe they didn't like any of the quarterbacks. I mean, that's always possible too, because you don't plan on picking in the top 5 of the draft all that often. So they're passing all the quarterbacks. So I guess what's Matt Ryan's long-term future? Is it a year, a few years, or is he just going to retire there? I mean, what's going on?
So I'm looking at his contract breakdown right now. They've got him obviously on the books for this year. And then he's got 2 more years on his contract after the 2021 season. So basically when he hits 39 after the 2023 season is the next time that he will kind of hit free agency. The tricky thing though for Atlanta is that because they had to free up so much of their space just to get under the salary cap for this year, they did kind of structure and convert some of Matt Ryan's base salary over into that signing bonus. But that then, of course, gets spread out. So it did kick the can down the road to next offseason, as well as he's going to have a really, really high cap number. Now, obviously, the Falcons could still decide to move on from Matt Ryan if they want to, and just eat a lot of that dead cap. I do believe they have some other dead cap money that will come off the books after this season. So they could kind of just try to stay around that same level while moving on from Matt Ryan. But like you said, he's been playing really well, especially the last three games of the season. It seems like he's getting comfortable in this offense. He is adjusting to a lot of new players around him. I mean, think about it. The Falcons just won a game where Matt Ryan is throwing to Hayden Hurst, Mike Davis, Cordarrelle Patterson, Tajae Sharp. These are guys that have not even been in Atlanta prior to this year. And so once they get Calvin Ridley back, once they get Russell Gage back, I think Matt Ryan really could have a very solid season. And even if the team overall is not successful, the stuff that Matt's doing game in and game out looks no different than how he's done it throughout his really celebrated career. I mean, he's going to go down when he retires, leaves, gets traded, what have you. I mean, he's already the greatest Falcon to ever play this game. And so I don't necessarily know if the team is just ready to push him out the door right now, especially if he plays well this year. You're obviously much closer to being relevant
without him.
Yeah, while you've got a quarterback, then because that's the thing you asked about the rookie quarterbacks. None of them are really lighting the world on fire. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, who you guys just saw, can make some incredible throws in a single game. And he obviously did enough to help Jacksonville get their first win. But traditionally, even a really good rookie quarterback is kind of like your 24th best quarterback in the league. Like it takes a little bit of time. So maybe that's an argument to say, hey, like, were the Falcons actually the right team to probably do the Trey Lance approach and take a guy like that, stash him for the year, and then figure it all out? Maybe. But I also know that Arthur Smith, like, Kyle Pitts unlocks this offense in a way that's got to make Arthur Smith just so enamored with the possibilities of what it can be, because he truly can line up all over the field. The Falcons have been using him in a lot of creative ways. It really hasn't panned out so far in terms of Kyle's production in the box score, but when you watch them from a game-to-game, snap-to-snap basis, there's so much potential for Kyle Pitts in this offense. And I mean, a generational tight end can be a center point on a championship winning team. And the Falcons seem like they've at least got one in place. That's one thing down. I think they'll try to figure it all out as they go here, but having at least one solution now for the long term, hopefully in Kyle Pitts, like that's probably worth the number four pick that they gave up.
Yeah. And I think with Ryan, it does come down to, cause he's an asset where if he was on the trade block, they could get a haul for him. Cause quarterback, there's a lot of teams out there who could use Matt Ryan right now at quarterback, and they could probably get a lot in return even at his age, which now his age really isn't even a thing anymore because we see guys play into their 40s more often than not. So that's the interesting approach, is do you try to get something for him, stockpile some picks, find your next quarterback that way and just take that long game approach, or do you try to keep him in place for a couple of years, have him play into his 40s and try to put pieces around him to win? That's a tough call because he is playing at a high level and he's a model of consistency. You know what you're getting from him year after year, week after week. He really doesn't fluctuate all too much up or down.
Right.
So that's going to be interesting to watch, I think, because like I said, if he was on the trade block, you'd have teams lined up trying to get him, I think. I really do.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at, like, what would a Pittsburgh team with Matt Ryan at quarterback right now look like instead of Big Ben? I mean, even like the Dolphins.
They would take him in a heartbeat.
I know people are kind of now cooling on to all that stuff. He's still, I guess, like, the hope has to be that he can turn around. But now with all the trade stuff coming out,
I think he's done in Miami. And it's not even – it has nothing to do about his level of play. He's done in that they have set him up to fail. And with just the trade talk and not even shooting down the trade talk, even if it is false, they have never really publicly shut it down. They have, you know, wrecked this kid's confidence or not even given him an outward public support in any way. So I think whether
it's kind of weird,
it's so odd. So I don't know how that's going to play out, but I think he might be good somewhere else. I just don't see it in Miami. But you look at teams, even team like the Giants, who might move on from Jones after this year, they'd be interested in Matt Ryan. You look you look at a team like the Panthers, which I know they're inside the NFC South, so it's probably a little bit trickier. You could have a team like Houston, maybe. I mean, there's going to be teams who would love to have a quarterback like Ryan, even for a handful of years. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, they could get a lot of picks for him and, you know, try that long game approach rebuild. But I know head coaches in this league they don't like they all want to win now. None of them really want to go through a rebuild.
No. And they definitely won't say it.
Yeah.
Even though sometimes it makes sense.
It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. Hey, we
even when they're doing it, they won't say it.
Right. Yeah. But we get where the Falcons are at. We understand where a team like the Jets is at or something like that. Like, it's okay to just say, look, guys, playoffs are the goal, certainly. We're going to go approach every single week like we want to win games, but like this is probably a little bit of a year of figuring out who's going to be here long term, who works, coming to some sort of like identity agreement between the players, the coaches, like what is gelling, and that's fine. And we're probably sitting here like just saying that's well and good. We will take it game by game along with this team. It's weird that they don't say that because they definitely should more often.
Yeah, absolutely. So this season, I guess, what's the, in your eyes, the biggest surprise with the Falcons and the biggest letdown, I'll say, so far through the season? One thing that really said, hey, that's kind of a surprise. That's working out a lot better than I thought. And one thing is like, I thought that would work out, but it's not quite working out on each side, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you the obvious, probably positive offensively is Cordarrelle Patterson for Atlanta. I mean, I mentioned all the new weapons that Matt Ryan is for better and worse, like adjusting to. Cordarrelle Patterson's absolutely been a better. And yes, he's being used as a running back. He's currently second on the team with 41 carries to Mike Davis's 62. So, I mean, it's a pretty, not totally even split, but like that's a clear 1A, 1B type of workload because Wayne Gallman is third on this team with 7 carries. So it's really a two-back approach here in Atlanta. Cordarrelle's been much more effective as kind of a receiver on a per-play basis, and he's got 4 touchdowns receiving-wise so far, and he's second on the team with 295 receiving yards. So Cordarrelle Patterson's been like the guy so far for Atlanta's offense, and it's mainly because the disappointing part of the offense so far has been Calvin Ridley. And yeah, he's doing fine so far. He missed one game and he's got 255 yards and a touchdown catch. That's not the worst thing in the world, but especially for Calvin, because he starts every single year as hot as I've ever seen any player start a season. You go back and look at his game logs. I mean, it's not just yards, it's touchdown. He'll have like a 3 touchdown game and it always comes in like week 2 or week 3. And on top of that, it's like 147 yards, 9 catches, 3 touchdowns. And you're just like, where did this come from? So he starts seasons really, really fast. For whatever reason, I mean, there's probably a lot of reasons. New offense, new scheme, new role. You don't have Julio. Defenses are now looking to take you away. For all of those reasons, it's been a little bit of a slow start for Calvin Ridley. I think there's a lot of people confident that he will pick it back up because, again, this is all a work in progress for the offense especially. And I think that Calvin's too talented to not pick it up. Defensively, I think AJ Terrell has really, really emerged and taken a step in his second season. He's not getting challenged a lot, but when he is, he's limiting the yards after the catch. He is not really making a ton of mistakes when the ball was in the air. We saw one play in London where he did get beat deep. And he was recovering and coming back, and he got there just ahead of the ball. So it set the Jets up at the 1 yard line. But it was even impressive that he kind of recovered as quickly as he did to the point where he overran the receiver and then ran into him. And it wasn't necessarily like the ball was underthrown or something. It was just kind of AJ was faster and got there. So he has played really well, which the Falcons desperately needed. And then there's still not much of a pass rush from the Falcons defense, which there really hasn't been in, it feels like, I don't know, 2 decades. So I think that will pick up as well, because we heard actually Dean Pease today say that they haven't gotten into as much of the defensive playbook as he thought they would have by this point. He's had to kind of keep it simple. And that's really because like Dan Quinn's system was built around the cover 3, cover 1. And so they're fundamentally having to kind of put in a brand new defensive way of thinking, because a lot of these players on this defense were brought here in that vision of the cover 3, cover 1 and what they do. So guys like Deion Jones and Foye Oluokun, 2 really good linebackers, are now kind of doing completely different things, but just totally new roles than what they've had. So I trust the defense will kind of continue to take large steps, but the pass rush, because they wanted to get everybody involved, they're going to blitz really frequently. We haven't seen that a lot. Now I guess I understand a little bit more why, but hopefully that's something that picks up and then the sacks come as a result.
Well, if there's a week ever to get healthy with your pass rush, this is it. Miami's offensive line is struggling, to just say it nicely. And I mean, they make every defensive line look like the 85 Bears. So I think Atlanta should have a little more success here this week. So let's talk about this week's game. From Miami, they got a lot of guys who missed last week's game. No Xavier Howard, no Byron Jones, no Devontae Parker, no Preston Williams. Those four up in the air. Will Fuller still out. I think with those four, from the sounds of it, they were at practice today and they were on the field at least. So I would guess at least a couple of those guys might play, if not all four, maybe. But either way, Miami struggles to stop the run. And on offense, they just don't score any points. So, I mean, I guess my question is, with Atlanta, how do you see this game sort of playing out? And what do you think Atlanta has to do here to beat Miami?
Well, actually, I've got a question for you real quick before I answer that. Of those four guys, who is the most important for Miami to get back in the lineup?
It's got to be one of the corners, because you're facing Ridley this week. So they need one of those two corners to play to match up against Ridley, Jones, or Howard. Parker, he's been here since, I think, 2015. The guy's always hurt. Yeah. Preston Williams, he's always hurt as well. So they're used to playing without them. It's not really – I mean, they can get by. And plus, they still have Waddle, and they still have some other guys. Without those corners this week, against Jacksonville last week, Jacksonville really doesn't have a big-time number one wide receiver. Marvin Jones is a nice player. Not on the level of Ridley. So with Ridley out there, Jones or Howard needs one of the two need to be on the field. Hopefully they're both on the field for Miami's sake, but yeah, those are probably the most important.
Okay. And that makes sense. And obviously when I was going, I now have subjected myself to the Jags Dolphins game twice. I watched it live and then I watched it just again on replay yesterday to kind of prep for this week. I was surprised at how at times Jacksonville was just able to create some big explosive plays against that Dolphins defense. And I think that any recipe for success for Atlanta kind of starts there. This isn't under Dirk Cutter's offense. And when you think about like certainly the Steve Sarkisian, Kyle Shanahan before that, it was explosive plays really defined this offense. And it was the deep shots to, usually it was Calvin Ridley. They would set it up and then they would just let it fly downfield. So far, that's not really been the game plan for Atlanta, but that's not to say that they can't get some explosive plays. Cordarrelle Patterson has created a lot. Kyle Pitts had several last week in London. And once they get Calvin Ridley and Russell Gage, who really has only played in a couple of games this season, he's kind of the X factor that the Falcons have been missing because they expect him to step up. I think hitting some explosive plays against Miami is going to help kind of, you know, loosen up that defense, get them moving around and creating even more space to exploit. And that's what I think we saw in the second half that Jacksonville was able to do well. And then the other part of that formula for Atlanta to win is the part that I think when I was watching the Dolphins kind of like fizzle out in that second half, because I was honestly shocked that they lost that game. It was a game that they, in the first half,
should have been up by more.
Everything they wanted to, kind of offensively and defensively. But in the second half, what I noticed, it was just the situational football. I don't think Miami executed very well. I know that kind of their last offensive drive got criticized a lot, you know, at fourth and one and then giving them the ball back. But that's a tricky situation to be in because it's a tie game there. And so I understood what they were doing is they are trying to run down the clock because you don't want to give them the ball back. But then you find yourself in those weird like third and ones where now if you don't get it, now it's a fourth and one. And it was I thought that they kind of got a little bit too reserved. But even on top of that, I mean, there were key third downs that they weren't picking up. Some of the turnovers just right near the goal line, things like that. I thought that, and of course, coming away with field goals in the red zone, that more than anything, I think is why Miami lost that game. And so that's the other part to how I think the Falcons need to approach this is execute in the situational football and create a couple of explosive plays. And I think that this is a game that Atlanta should feel pretty comfortable heading into, because I think that they are built to accomplish those couple of goals. And if you're able to do that, I mean, there aren't really a ton of games that you're going to be out of. And I think that the Falcons are good enough to beat this Dolphins team if they just kind of take care of their business on third down in the red zone, come away with touchdowns, which they've done a good job of this year. And then, yeah, I mean, kind of limit the explosive plays and hit the explosive plays.
Yeah. On the Miami side, the big reason for the, in my opinion, at least, they have regressed so much is last year, especially on that side of the ball, they had a few veterans. They had Bobby McCain in the secondary, Kyle Vannoy at linebacker, Shaq Lawson on the line, and they got rid of them all. They got rid of them all. Now, not that those guys are superstar players, but yeah, when you have a young team, you need right. a couple veterans around those guys who can, you know, Vannoy can line up everyone on that side of the ball prior to the play. Shaq Lawson's good at stopping the run, sort of setting the edge. Bobby McCain, solid player at safety. Obviously, for salary cap reasons, this, that, and the other, they just ran them all off. Now, I was screaming about this all offseason. You can't run all of them off. They ran all of them off. And now you're replacing them with, in the secondary, Jones, who's a second-year player, Javon Holland, who's a rookie, linebacker. They got Phillips around one, who's played very well, but once again, he's a rookie. And up front yep. on the line, they just really didn't even replace Shaq Lawson at all, kind of. So they went from having a number one third down on third down. They were number one in the league on that side of the ball, now being ranked last because it's a bunch of young kids with no veteran leadership at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's hurting them on that side of the ball. On offense, the play calling is very bland. And they don't score touchdowns. I mean, I know he's only played two games at quarterback, too, because he got hurt like the first series of week two. So I get it. He hasn't been there the entire time. But that was Jacksonville. Everyone has big days against Jacksonville. I read yeah. off the stats on our podcast on Wednesday night. Bridgewater had a big day. Joe Burrow had a big day. Guys, everyone's had a big day versus Jacksonville. So you can't go just by the numbers. He had one touchdown drive after the opening drive of the game. That's not good enough in this league. And I think, you know, it's not his fault they lost, but he also, you know, I always like to say you need your starting quarterback a couple times a year, put your team on the back, on his back, lead him to a win. If you can't do it versus Jacksonville, that might be a problem because they weren't, they only scored 20 points. Not that they're asking to score 30, score more than 20, and they couldn't do it. So,
yeah,
they can't run the ball, Lick. They have no running game to speak of. If they run the ball this week versus Atlanta, be worried if you're a fan of the Falcons because they can't run the ball versus anybody, and they're very one-dimensional on offense, and it's going to be interesting because I do think one of these games, they've been beaten down the last 5 weeks very bad. They're going to take it out on somebody. I don't know who that somebody's going to be. It might be Houston in a few weeks, or it could be Atlanta this week. I don't know. It won't be the Bills. I know that much. So it's going to be interesting from that perspective because I do think there's going to be a week where they put it together for at least one full game.
Yeah, I mean, you do – the one thing that makes me feel, I think, a little bit better on that front because I thought coming into the year, like, I was high on Miami. I didn't
– Everyone was.
Yeah, I don't know if I necessarily knew or my awareness of the actual roster elements, like the players who left, who came in, all of that stuff. My knowledge obviously is not yeah. as high on the Dolphins as like somebody who lives in Miami follows. But yeah, I mean, it seemed like the stuff that Flores has been able to do and the turnaround, especially on defense. I do like that defensive line, but yeah, I mean, when like the backbreaker and you're talking about Tua, like you need a quarterback who can make winning plays. And sometimes that has to be with their legs. I know that's not Tua's MO, which is the thing that like I think is setting him kind of back from a lot of these younger players. Is you look at a guy like Jalen Hurts, the Eagles I think can at least afford to like buy some time with him because he is such a good runner and he can at least get two rushing touchdowns a game and they can try to get the passing to come along. But with Tua, I mean, when that interception that he threw right after the fumble was just a back-breaking interception. You just can't do that. I mean, like, it was – I don't even know where he was throwing that ball.
Yeah, I mean, and again, I know, and he gets a lot of support down in South Florida. People make a lot of excuses for him, which some of them are fair, I will say. But, you know, I don't know. So he's got – some of it is you need your quarterback sometimes to just make a play and just win you a game. And if you're not going to do that for Jacksonville, when are you going to do it? Because last year, he actually played okay last year for the most part. But again, he had more support around him. It wasn't a great offensive line. It was a little bit better than this year's, though. He had just a little more support. And he actually won when they went to Arizona last year. You know, he carried that team in the second half. He did it once. That was great. We did it once last year.
Yeah.
You do it twice. And people say, yeah, he got hurt. But that's the problem. He's always hurt. I mean, he's always hurt. He was hurt last year with a thumb injury, missed a handful of games. Now he gets hit with the ribs. I know it's not his fault he got hit in the ribs, but he got hit. And I'm not saying, you know, a lot of people probably would have been hurt. But when you put that injury on top of all the injuries at college, the injury last year with the thumb, and it's like it's never ending. And there does come a point where I can see why they're interested, you know, put the off the field stuff in Watson, because I don't know if – he has shown the front office and the staff who's there every day, who see stuff that we never see, that he's going to be that guy. Now, he might be a very good quarterback, but if you want to win a Super Bowl, you need more than just very good. And that's going to be the question. He's got the rest of this year to show them that, because you don't think, well, I think, unless they trade for Watson by the end of the week and then they trade him somewhere else. I don't know. But he's probably going to have the rest of this year. And that's going to be the story on Tua. And everything around them is not going to be perfect, but it's not perfect for a lot of quarterbacks. And I think that's what people don't understand. A lot of quarterbacks don't have the best offensive line, don't have the best running game, don't have the best wide receivers. They still make plays. They still find a way.
Absolutely. And I mean, even somebody like Matt Ryan, who is not fleet footed, who does not bring that running element to it. We've seen at times when the chips are down, he finds ways to either with his legs pick up a third and six when he needs to and kind of take a hit to do so, or just makes an incredible play out of the pocket and kind of steps up and out and makes a throw on the run or just takes a hit, buys some time, but puts the ball where it needs to. So, yeah, I mean, this is probably the bleakest area that I never want to be. And I know I will as a fan, but like when you're in that like year two and it does kind of start off with, oh man, maybe this guy actually isn't what we thought it would be, but like, we got to kind of, let's just at least wait it out and see. Like that is no man's land, my friend, when it comes to the quarterback position, and no team wants to find themselves there.
And that's why the whole thing with Watson is so interesting, because they might be willing to part with whatever they got to part with. And it ain't going to be cheap to trade for a guy who they might not be able to play for until 2023 or 2024. I mean, you don't know. I'm sure I would have to think they know something, or they've spoken to people and they have some sort of an idea how this might play out, but you don't really know for sure, I guess. And that might be a risk, but I don't know. I mean, that's a whole different story. We'll see how that plays out in the coming weeks or months or years. Who knows? So I guess, what's your prediction for this Sunday's game, if you have one? I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't.
I think that like the other part of this game that we haven't really touched into is I'm just so curious to see, especially given how that Jacksonville game ended for Miami and the fact that they are not choosing to go into a bye week off of their London trip. Like that's a whole element to this game as well, because the Falcons are coming off a bye. They are going to be as healthy as kind of refreshed as possible. And you mentioned, you know, sure, is Miami going to snap on some team just at some point?
It's going to happen. I just don't know what week.
Put it together right. So I'm kind of like trying to figure out if the all of the negatives working against Miami, does that actually like work in their favor? To it's like when you're on the playground and if a fight breaks out and kind of like one kid is just on the clear losing end of a fight, but then they turn into the Hulk because they just get so mad and like angry. Like I wonder if that's the Dolphins this week, but I really don't think so. I think there's probably maybe like a 27% chance that like Dolphins just come out, know their season's on the line and play like it. But that being said, I think there's a bigger chance that the Falcons just continue to show the incremental improvement that we've seen. I am a big fan of kind of new coaches, new coaching staffs coming out of a bye week. I think it gives them a lot of time to really sharpen and fine-tune their game plan, what they want to do, what throw the things out that aren't working so far. And now they've got a better sense of these new guys on the field. Somebody like Cordarrelle Patterson, how many plays do you think they were putting in for him over the bye week? So I like Atlanta to really come out and kind of take control of this game early. And I'm going to say it's going to be like 32-17. Like, I kind of don't think it'll be very close.
Yeah. I mean, it could go that way because they are 0-2 at home so far this year, Miami, and both games were just abysmal losses. At home to the Bills was like 35-0 or something. Then they lost to the Colts, who weren't even very good, and that wasn't close. Their next four games, Miami, home against Atlanta, at the Bills, home Houston, home Ravens. They're not beating the Bills or Ravens, so that gives me a 50-50 shot. It's either going to be this week or against Houston that they're going to break out. I'm going to go this week just because I know how miserable it's been down there. You hear these guys in the press, you hear the coaches in the press, and just how it's not a fun place. It's not a fun place. And I think if Atlanta was a little bit stronger on defense, I think I probably wouldn't pick Miami to win. But because I know Atlanta sort of struggles on defense, and Miami probably will get at least Parker back to go with Waddle, to go with the tight end who's having a big year down here in Miami. I'm going to take Miami, but I do think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think both teams are going to actually probably get in a shootout because I don't think either team is going to stop anybody, honestly. So because I think with Pitts and Ridley, they're going to get their points, Atlanta. So, and I do think Miami one of these weeks will just let caution.
Yeah.
Just let caution to the wind and go off.
Like, unleash Waddle and Gesicki. Like that
Waddle catches a ton of passes, but they're all at the line of scrimmage because the offensive line can't hold a block long enough for anybody to run downfield. That's the problem with Waddle. He catches a ton of balls, but they're all at the line of scrimmage, and he's got to break a bunch of tackles to get any yards. The tight end, some weeks he's used like he was last week, and he was used in the fourth quarter of the Raiders game. No, the fourth quarter of one of these games. I can't remember. They all blend together right now. But some weeks he's not even used at all. They don't even look at him, and it's like – So that's why I think one of these weeks, and I do think it'll be this week, but I wouldn't be shocked if I'm wrong either. They're just going to go off on somebody, and, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, either one of these teams aren't going to the playoffs, so in the big picture, it really doesn't matter, I guess. But it'll be a fun game to watch. I do think there'll be a lot of points scored.
I mean, hopefully, but those are the famous last words is it's going to be a shootout, and now we're going to get a 9-6 Falcons.
Just do that. I can't.
Dolphins game on
that game against the Colts versus Miami was the most boring game I've ever seen. That game was dreadful. I can't sit through another one of these. But Will, thanks for your time today. Everyone, follow Will McFadden on Twitter at Will McFadden, and also listen to the Believe in Falcons podcast at the Believe Podcast Network. And you also write for, how do you say that site? The Falcolic.
The Falcoholic.
Yeah. Falcoholic. Go to falcoholic.com. That's a cool name for a site. Check that out as well. Will, thanks so much.
Of course, Mike. Anytime.
All right. You have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the DolphinsTalk.com podcast. Be sure to visit DolphinsTalk.com every day for all of your latest Miami Dolphins news.